We have taken a particular interest over the years in not only producing relevant peer-reviewed publications, but trying to build tools and bring stakeholders together around tools, and particularly tools that bring data and information on the social determinants of health, as well as healthcare, into one place so that you can better make decisions. And we've been really excited to see this evolve over time from very small projects into ones that have gotten bigger and bigger, and in the wake of the ACA, to try to help smaller areas, communities, with their policymaking, with their planning, in light of and in the context of evidence and good data. And it's always a challenge, but that's really what we see as the next frontier for us. So as a center, again, we range from, again, a geographer in the room to sociology-trained statisticians, economists, et cetera. We bring a team with a diverse set of interests together in one place. But as I mentioned, at least one of our portfolios of interest is the effective visual display of information. I look for a show of hands. Has anyone seen this bit of display that Edward Tufte loves to show off and call the finest piece of visually displayed data in the history of visually displayed data? It's a piece by Charles Joseph Minard that effectively managed to bring together the tale of Napoleon's demise as he marched from France into wintry Russia and back again, tying temperature, the size of his troops, the movement of his troops and army, and time together in one rendering that shows you rapid progression and diminution of his troop size as they hit Moscow and came back again. And again, we've tried to, in the context of our projects, find ways to bring this context of visual display and stakeholder engagement through visual display into play through not only online visual display tools, but offline and desktop GIS use. In this particular case, I want to talk about Greater New Orleans, a city that certainly has, well before the Hurricane Katrina tragedy of 2005, seen its fair share of troubles in planning and effectively delivering primary care through a safety net. And in the wake of Katrina, it really saw feast and famine all at once. It was well known that the population at least temporarily disappeared, as did the healthcare provider population, but also that you saw a tremendous array of resources, federal and otherwise, come pouring into a city that, again, was coming into the public awareness as having a particularly ineffective safety net. And so we had the pleasure of the last year of working with a newly appointed mayoral health commissioner, Dr. Karen DeSalvo, who has been in the really in the thick of primary care planning since Katrina, to try to pull federal resources and national stakeholders together to take a look at what New Orleans might need for the next 5 years. Here they are 5 to 7 years out of Katrina, lots and lots of resources, not necessarily effectively coordinated, and now facing an ACA, which is going to unleash an untold number of uninsured or newly insured patients onto their primary care safety net, and trying to figure out what should we be doing to effectively plan for the workforce, the infrastructure, and the patient care needs for 2015 and beyond. The team that she was able to pull together included our center, the Robert Graham Center, and our partners through our built project Health Landscape that I'll tell you about towards the end of the presentation, but also those who were bringing some of the federal resources to bear, particularly the Health Resources and Services Administration, which funds the community health centers, the Ryan White Program, and many other safety net primary care delivery funding. Also, the Strong Communities Project, an initiative of the Obama administration to try to bring multiple social determinant stakeholders together, education, health, welfare, you name it, into discussions about how to build stronger communities. Regional players such as the Louisiana Public Health Institute, a number of resources drawn through the mayor's office, and a stakeholder group that included the Local Hospital Association, facing its own community health needs assessment requirements for the year 2013 and how they would be a better deliverer of community good. The Louisiana Primary Care Association, which represents the community health centers in the area, and the Primary Care Organization, really the federal representative in state to help with workforce and infrastructure planning, as well as the health centers themselves and the academic health centers that produce the graduates, hopefully, that would serve Greater New Orleans. Our catchment area of interest was four parishes, Plaquemines, West Jefferson, Orleans Parish, and St. Bernard. And the goal was to develop a comprehensive overview and set of policy recommendations for healthcare access in the New Orleans area for use in planning and policymaking so that they could hopefully in the future achieve and maintain equitable access to care. One might debate whether that was currently or even prior to Katrina the case. And again, I particularly want to look in a report that's now 64 pages long and far too much to cover in this short, short presentation at the aspects of geospatial technology that helped inform this process. So we did have structured conversations with a number of stakeholders, a wide array of data exchanges from state Medicaid to a particular Medicare program that I'll mention in a moment. We had an array of descriptive data analyses that were brought to bear by our partners at ASPE. We created also a tool that will live on after the project, the New Orleans Safety Net Visualization Tool, which with more time and internet I would love to display for you, but I'll at least show you pictures. And our sources of information were not only the stakeholders, but as I mentioned, Louisiana Medicaid claims, the Primary Care Access Stabilization Grant. Now, for those unfamiliar, we poured about $100 million of Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services money into primary care access stabilization in the wake of Katrina. This was a huge amount of funding, which over 4 years covered some 400,000 plus patient visits in all forms of settings. And this was in addition to the monies brought in by the state, by FEMA, and by city and local shareholders. This is a bit of a mess. Huge investment, not coordinated. Sometimes mom and pop van driven mobile units sitting right next door to something open in the backyard of someone's home in the Ninth Ward, which in the wake of Katrina made absolute sense, but 5 years later was tough to sustainably imagine delivering primary health care. We also brought to bear workforce data sets such as the American Medical Association Master File. Actually, the National Provider Identifier from CMS allowed us to look at nurse practitioners, behaviorists, oral health providers as well. And then, of course, population data sets such as the American Community Survey and the Census. I won't delve into all the arrays and domains of findings that we report on in our report to come out later this year. Just know that it covered anything from sustainability to specialty care, the delivery and implementation of HIT, covering and finance, behavioral health, how we might more effectively communicate to the population and reach out to point out what was available in the primary care safety net, elements of workforce, primary care public health information, social determinants, and emergency preparedness. But I will just suffice it to say that there were some interesting discoveries along the way. New Orleans, it turns out, is actually not suffering a workforce shortage. In primary care to population ratios, the four-county area appears to be in the top 10th percentile nationally for PC to population ratios. We've seen considerable growth, particularly relative to population size, which has only returned to about three-quarters of the pre-Katrina levels, in its primary care safety net. 102 underserved access points, some 52 sites of coordinated primary care delivery that include federally qualified health centers, FQHC lookalikes, private practitioners, and other community health centers. Some 28 that have actually migrated towards some level of patient-centered medical home recognition, 12 that actually achieved level 3. And in 2010, the last year of funding for the PCASG, this Primary Care Access Stabilization Grant, they were still serving some 160,000 patients with these additional federal funds. Now, what do these funds allow you to do if you're a provider? They allow you to offer the same kind of sliding fee that you find in your community health centers to any and all comers. You don't even have to demonstrate need in most cases. So you can imagine that this created quite a cottage industry. You come in to see me for any of your needs, I have access to stabilization dollars to pay for that care. So what we started to show through our access to the CMS data that was at the zip code tabulation area level for service provision, because we had 4 full years of information from CMS to look at, is that the PSAG, the PCASG grant, appeared to serve quite a bit wider area than the four parish area. So you're looking down in the left corner at the percentage of all the PCASG patients served in 2007 to 2011. And I should add that this was actually extended by the state under a Greater New Orleans grant called the GNOCHC. So we actually continue to see some state funding. So what you see is actually when we pulled this data set down and we started to plot it, we saw patients that had addresses in Missouri and Arkansas and Oklahoma, some of whom we imagine maintained addresses after they left for Katrina and came back, but some of whom we're not exactly sure how they managed to achieve services from this particular grant. But you see a wide, wide splay of services rendered well beyond the four parish area. We were able to use geospatial technology in this excellent data set to really track, and I unfortunately can't show you but one or two of our hundreds of maps that were presented, the core and hyper-dense areas of service under the grant. And this also allows you, if you're sitting at the stakeholder level, to understand where you're going to have the greatest dependence going forward when suddenly the Medicaid waiver at the state level, which is due to expire at the end of this year, doesn't perpetuate anymore. The real lessons we learn in this process is you have simultaneous gaps and service area overlap, service area excess. And that's a real shocking finding to come out of the mayor's office. It's actually pointing out that between FEMA service, Federal Community Health Center service, Ryan White programs, other private and state-funded service delivery, faith-based health organizations, you've got a real potential problem of too much and too little sitting side by side. And I won't go pointing out the specific areas where those are highlighted, but just note that this is a subject of great consternation and debate in the stakeholder discussions that we're having now. And the geospatial technology has really helped you to get there. We're also able to take a look at really social accountability equations at a time when graduate medical education, currently a recipient of $13 billion in federal funding nationally, is under debates about how you might reform this. Medicaid was never intending in 1966 to pay $13 billion to fund residency education in America, and they're finally in Congress starting to say, you know, going forward, we want to get some idea of what we're funding. We may not only cut funding, but we need some form of metrics of what we get in exchange for all this funding. And so we're going in and taking the American Medical Association master file and other data sets, tying it back to the medical schools and saying, you know, other than U.S. News and World Report, you need other ways of measuring what society gets for this funding. And we can demonstrate for you that at LSU New Orleans, you've got a retention rate of graduates remaining in the state of Louisiana of about 56%, whereas at Tulane, you're down about 16%. Now, you have a public institution and a private institution, and that may be perfectly okay, but at least we need to be transparent about these social accountability measures. This, again, is a series of tables that I won't dive in too deeply, but just know that we began to look at the medical school's graduates who practice in shortage areas, who ended up in general surgery, psychiatry, family medicine, and primary care professions, what percentage in shortage areas were actually practicing in-state, and so forth and so on. We were able to even break down by parish, Orleans, Plaquemines, Jefferson, St. Bernard, exactly who was bringing providers to those areas. It doesn't necessarily mean looking backwards that you know where that will happen going forwards, but it certainly takes that history to make such predictions. We used, again, a tool that we built several years ago called the Medical School Mapper to start to tell stories about where schools' footprints or service areas tended to map by county. And finally, again, I would love to demonstrate this for you, but we were able to generate for the first time community health center service areas or health center service areas using this PCASG data that I mentioned to you. And this really allows fantastic storytelling, which doesn't come across in a room like this, but only when you have a room of stakeholders who really know at the ground level what these areas mean and what they look like. So imagine the one place to be able to come in and look at all 52 comprehensive primary care service delivery units of all types, and roll over and click on each, and understand immediately what their ZICTA, their zip code tabulation area, geographies of service look like. And even then, going beyond that, be able to select multiple ones. In this case, I've selected Kids First Louisiana, Jefferson Community Healthcare, and a West Jefferson Behavioral Health Center. And I'm sorry I've cut off the legend in the corner, but it starts to show you where you see the geographies, where they overlap. Overlap may be a good thing, but it's certainly something you ought to take in mind when you're imagining a shortfall in 2013 and beyond from the end of the Medicaid waiver and federal funding and trying to figure out how you're going to sustain a slightly bloated and yet still potentially, you know, underpopulated infrastructure and workforce delivery unit. So, again, we really see this in a broader context, not just a story about New Orleans, but one about more effective primary care public health integration, which we're seeing highlighted in reports like the Institute of Medicine's Primary Care and Public Health, Exploring Integration to Improve Population Health, which among its recommendations says, you know, you have to link staff funds and data at the regional, state, and local levels. You have to figure out ways to coordinate the funding streams to allow processes like this to happen. And you need technologies like GIS to help you get there. There need to be joint efforts by the CDC, HRSA, and its state and local partners to undertake inventories of existing health and healthcare databases, identify new data sets, and create from these consolidated platforms for sharing and displaying local population health data that could actually be used by communities. And on top of that, the NCVHS, our Vital Health Statistics Committees, are saying, you know, we've come to believe that getting usable data in the hands of communities, so driving it down to the small area level, this is not just a federal process, and ensuring that they have the tools and capacities to use them can move the nation a long distance towards realizing the public benefits of the informatics revolution. Communities are going to need many types of data, data from health records, environmental and resource measures, vital statistics, and a myriad of surveys of community attitudes and behaviors, as well as qualitative data on the experiences and opinions of community members. We are in the process of building a series of tools, including, again, a UDS mapper that's now in its third year of existence to try to help federal qualified health centers and the HRSA planners figure out where you put the next 1, 10, 50, or 500 community health centers. We have two straight administrations and three straight presidential cycles where you've seen an expansion of the health centers. And we may be about to see a retrenchment. In either case, you need planning using utilization data, population data to figure out where to put the next and the next and the next center. And you need also to help those that don't have the resources to go and grab that information, not have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to have consultants help them get there. Additionally, we're building things like the Med School Mapper, expanding our health landscape platform so you can look in this case at the RECs, the Regional Extension Centers for Health IT and Meaningful Use, understand where they're actually making an impact. Trying to help Community Care of North Carolina, the Medicaid Delivery Unit, bring together the Beacon Community, CCNC, all of its demographic, population, and healthcare information in the form of claims into one place so they can be more effective planners at the state level. And make comparisons side by side between costs and disease, for example, county by county. Understand where quality measures overlay social determinants at the practice level. I think I'm going to end there and open it up to questions and just let you know that a lot of this is complemented by research on the back end by, again, talented scientists like Dr. Girali here who are trying to understand social deprivation, a better way of measuring need using determinants of health. And I'll stop there.